This is a podcast called Walk, Talk, Listen. An attempt to connect people and make this world a bit better by sharing opinions and experiences based on the belief that everyone's perspective is true, albeit partial. My name is Maurice Bloem, and I would like to welcome you to yet another episode of Walk, Talk, Listen. Okay, good day, everybody. Yet another episode of our podcast, Walk, Talk, and Listen. I'm really delighted to have a colleague and a friend who I would, as usual, I'd like her to introduce herself. Carol, if you can go ahead and tell the listeners, who you are and for whom you work, etc.
Sure, it's great to be with you, Maurice. She'e Carol Bremer Bennett, Yenishe. My name is Carol Bremer Bennett, and I just introduced myself in Navajo, in Dene Bazad, as the Navajos would call it, and gave you also my clans. My clans are the Water Flows Together people, which I'm born for on my mother's side, and then the Bitter Water people, which is on my father's side. And so I am a proud member of the Navajo Nation, which is located in the southwest of the United States, in the states of New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah. And I live right now in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is the land of the three fires, the Potawatomi, the Pretoria, and the Ottawa people land that I'm on here. And I'm here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, serving as the executive director of World Renew, which is an agency that began in the Christian Reformed Church to work to alleviate poverty and hunger around the world, as well as to respond to disasters and crises.
Ik kan het erg waarderen dat jij je hebt voorgesteld in je eigen taal. Because this podcast is also about that, in realizing that we all bring different perspectives and that all these perspectives are partial. Carol, we know each other for quite a while now because we are both on the board of an excellent and marvelous organization, Growing Hope Globally. So I really would like to invite people to check them out, to Google them as well, because they're doing great work, and I'm really humbled and honored that I'm part of that board and being able to work with you. So thank you for your willingness to share your experience and your knowledge today. Question that I always ask is, Carol, if you would be asked to walk 100 miles in a week for a cause, for which cause would you walk 100 miles?
Thank you for that. As you talked about how you began with the crop walks, it brought me back to when I was a young girl. I actually grew up here in Grand Rapids, Michigan for a time, and the churches around here participated in the crop walks. And so we would do that every single year as young people in our church and get sponsors and raise awareness. And I have very, very vivid memories of that walk, journeying together, and then the people supporting along the way with water. And then sometimes they would have a church where you could go to get something to eat. It would just be a very small bowl of rice to remind you of the simplicity that so many people have to live off of every single day. And as I reflect back on that, I think I think that was a formative experience for me to now be walking alongside so many people who are living in poverty and who are experiencing hunger around the world. I think I would be compelled to walk 100 miles, definitely to raise awareness and to, I think I would want people to know about the struggles that particularly Indigenous people have around the world. So many times the powers that be struggle over resources and try to have power and control over things that were not originally theirs. And they end up pushing out the First Peoples. And this is true in the United States and Canada, of course, but it's also true in New Zealand and Australia. It's true in Nicaragua. It's true in Zambia. You know, it's true all over the world. And so I think as an Indigenous person myself, I would want to walk for that kind of awareness and to be able to tell the stories of the incredible long-term consequences and trauma that that causes in people. We have seen that so many times. And in my own Navajo history, that is such a current reality, even as the Navajos face the COVID crisis right now, to see how the oppression over hundreds of years has left them in a place where they do not have built, they have not been able to build up the capacity and the resilience to stand against something like COVID. And it feels a bit like we're reliving the traumas of smallpox when the smallpox first came with European settlers and conquerors to this land. And so I think I would walk for that kind of awareness and to raise people's attention levels to the fact that sometimes these things are solvable in very small ways, having access to the same basic resources that so many of us have access to, starting with water and the infrastructure of bringing water. That's been a huge detriment in the Navajo's fight against the COVID virus, is that 30% of people who live on the Navajo Nation still do not have running water in their homes. And this is in the United States. And so this is not acceptable. We work all over the world with World Renew to help communities plan how to drill wells and to bring water to their community members. And we've seen the transformation that that can bring, because it's, first of all, it's a health transformation because it's clean water. And then secondly, it's close by. So proximity matters, especially for women and girls in their community. And in Navajo, actually, we are a matriarchal society. And it's the women and the girls that hold families together, that work on the front lines, that hold our stories and keep our traditions alive. And so I think I would walk right now for that kind of, raising that kind of awareness.
Yeah, thanks for lifting that up. And I think it's, as you said, it's now, you know, more important than ever. Difficult times. Can you tell a little bit about your own upbringing and how your, you know, background played a role within that, and and also how you got involved in this work, and you know, what is your you know, did you learn for it? How was your journey?
Sure. So I, like I mentioned, I actually grew up here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I was adopted at a young age. And so I was actually adopted by people who were members of the Christian Reformed Church and who were Dutch, second, third generation Dutch. So I had a grandmother who was Dutch, who spoke a little bit of Dutch, but it wasn't something that was passed on to me, unfortunately. Certain words here and there that I know, and foods, of course. But I grew up in Grand Rapids. And, you know, I was raised by my parents to always honor and dignify that I was adopted and that that was an honorable thing. I always knew that I was Navajo. They shared that with me. But I always wondered what exactly that meant. And so I had to do a lot of exploration on my own. Fortunately, my father was a professor and he was able to bring people who were studying, who were Navajo evangelists, into my life. And so I got some great mentors and role models in my life early on and throughout. And so, you know, I grew up in a community that was predominantly Dutch immigrants, thinking I'm Navajo, I'm Navajo, I'm Navajo. And then after college, I decided to move to the Navajo Nation. A couple of these mentors that I had met along my journey encouraged me to do so. And I got out into New Mexico. I was probably there for about 3 weeks. And I realized I'm not Navajo at all. I'm Dutch. I don't know any of this. I don't have clans and connections. I don't have the language. I don't have an innate sense of the culture. And so I just became a student, a humble student, a little lost and ungrounded, maybe a little shaky in my foundation. But I had wonderful Christian brothers and sisters who were Navajo who started to walk alongside me in that journey. And actually was adopted by a Navajo mentor to be his sister. And so it was a ceremonial adoption, but he felt that I needed to have clans. And that's where I have now my Tohagleni and Totochitni clans. I have three children who are Navajo, as well as three children who are Ethiopian. And so it's just been a really great journey for me to have lots of different cultures and backgrounds and to see the beauty of God's diverse family come to my own family. I was actually in education for a long time. I worked in New Mexico at a school that had predominantly Navajo and Zuni students, and it was a Christian school. And I quickly learned that children are not isolated little beings. They're not pupils. They're members of not just, you know, they're not really students, they're children. They're children of parents, their nieces and their nephews and their grandchildren. And so the whole family is so critical to raising a child. And when that family is not functioning well and has needs and is struggling, then the child immediately shows that as well. And so we were working in very holistic ways in education. I had actually studied economics and religion as my minors and history and political science as my majors. And so I thought I would go into some kind of development work internationally, but I got to the Navajo Nation and realized this is like at that time we called it a third world country. This is like living in a developing poverty-stricken country right here in the United States. And so I found my calling not overseas, but right within this nation. And so I ended up staying there for about 25 years. And then 5 years ago, made a big shift to work in the international development sector, which has been really a fantastic opportunity. It's humbling, but there's so many things I've learned about how you listen to culture and adapt and know the context and honor what is already there. That it's been a really great fit for me with World Renew and their approach to doing community development. Mm-hmm.
You are referring to God. Is that also, you know, in the Navajo culture, is that how they call God, or do they have other names for it? And the way I'm asking is, you know, in the Netherlands, and this also related with a lot of the conversations that I always have when I'm walking 100 miles, we go back to what's the purpose in life, and we end up talking often about spirituality and religion. And what I realized that, you know, in the Netherlands, talking about God is actually something, even if you believe in it, it's, at least when I grew up, it's not something that you necessarily share with others. It's, you keep it for yourself. And what I've noticed in this culture in the US, you know, people, yeah, it's much more front and center. And the example I always give is, you know, when I see an athlete from the US winning a gold medal, the first person or the first entity that is thanked is God. Mm-hmm. And you would never say never, but you will, you know, seldomly hear the Dutch athlete doing that, although it's changing a little bit now. So I'm interested in how we try to articulate, you know, what life is about. And you mentioned God. How is that within the Navajo, mm-hmm. You know, a culture? How is that discussed about, you know, what life is and how it works?
Yeah, great question. So the Navajos believe that God runs through everything, is in everything, has designed everything. And so in that sense, with my Reformed faith and my Kuiperian roots from the Netherlands, that idea of God being in and through every square inch is very easy then for Navajos to recognize, oh, my traditional faith teaches this. My Christian faith, if I become a Christian, is not at odds with that. It just is more specific and names it. And there's a freedom in Christ that is there in the Christian faith that is not present in the traditional Navajo religion. So there is definitely a creator God. And so when you talk about the creator, that is very much something that Navajos can connect to. And so it's really a culture that is very caught up and built faith on general revelation about what you can see around you and how you automatically see a creator's hand in that beauty around you. There are other gods and divinities and entities as well. Mm-hmm. And so there are the holy ones. And so that also is a part of it. But in Navajo traditional religion, a lot of what happens to you is of your own doing. Mm-hmm. It's the evil that comes to you. There's a real darkness to that side of things. And a real carefulness about staying in balance, and because things will come and things will happen. And you'll always need to trace the evil and the hard things in life, your deepest sorrows, back to something or someone nearby you that caused that. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very difficult way to live because it's so punitive all the mm-hmm. time.
I often talk with folks also about that it seems that the younger generation deals differently with it or maybe not. Maybe you have another opinion. But so some people I've talked with say, you know, they look at religion and spirituality differently. Others say, no, they don't look differently at it. What is different is if you discuss or look at institutionalization of religion, so the church as such, and you know, a lot of young people don't feel welcome anymore, and they, you know, they are looking for justice issues, which not necessarily is part of the church according to them anymore. So what do you see from, you know, where you're sitting in terms of where the younger generation is going towards, you know, acknowledging of course that you have to be very careful in making generalizations around the youth. I mean, there are different, you know, you have the Gen X, Gen Z, and et cetera, et cetera. And then you have the different cultures. But yeah, can you respond a little bit to that?
Yeah, as far as with Native youth, you know, it's hard because even as Native young people, a lot of the culture is being lost. Language is being lost. And they're much more likely to know all the ins and outs of TikTok and Snapchat than to know, you know, how to behave in a traditional ceremony, you know? And so those kinds of things are being lost because there is this digital access that kind of, I don't know, it kind of blends cultures and it becomes its own culture and its own world. And it's very engaging. And there's a lot of aspiration by young people to be Americans and not to really be, you know, unique. And so I think that young people go through phases of just wanting to fit in and wanting to be like everybody else around them, be like, you know, movie stars and other, you know, athletes and so forth that they look up to, and wanting to be a big part of that world that they see on TV and the movies and so forth. But, and then they go through a phase where maybe they are away from home and they suddenly realize how unique their homes were, how unique their culture is. And then there can be kind of a return in the later 20s, early 30s, there can be this return. So I think in good Navajo fashion, things are kind of can go in a circle, but the importance is for that those to have enough of a foundation and enough of a strength that was in your home, in your, to have the circle, because if that's not there, you can't circle back. Mm-hmm. It's much harder to circle back to something that you never had than to something that was strongly present. And so I think the church is the same way. Mm-hmm. If Christianity and faith doesn't play a strong role in a young person's life, you can't hope for them to return to it once they start to get their own footing and really build their identity and build their life. And so if the church has not been relevant to them, has ignored them as young people, you know, that's a really dangerous place for the church to be. And certainly we see that in churches on various, you know, Indian reservations and nations, that the church is the church of the grandparents and the grandmothers and not necessarily of the young people. The grandparents have been taught sometimes that if you want to be a Christian, then you can no longer be Navajo. And so they can be very hard on some cultural aspects and things that they won't do. Especially those who are raised, you know, in the 1940s, 50s, even 60s, with the boarding schools and so forth that happened to the Native peoples. And so the grandparents have made a choice. I'm going to be Christian. I'm not going to be Navajo. Now, that choice isn't actually so clear. They're very, very Navajo, but they've kind of said there's certain things I'll never participate in or do or have anything to do with. And young people oftentimes don't like that. But there's certain things that have become taboo for Christians to engage in, simply because that was labeled as white by white missionaries as being pagan and unchristian. And so we have to look at what can we redeem. So I often get the question from young people, white college students who I used to speak with. They say, isn't it hard to be Navajo and to be Christian? And I would go into a long explanation of how, yes, it's hard to be Navajo and to be Christian. But after a while, I thought, you know what? It's also hard to be American and be Christian. Because there is a consumerism and an individualism and something being preached into your worldview and perspective there as well. And so often we can think, well, be an American, be a Christian, of course, it's so easy. I just have to thank God after I get my gold medal, right? But it's a lot deeper than that, you know, it's a lot deeper than that. So I like to flip the table sometimes on people and really say, you know, think about your own worldview. Are you really fitting your life into a biblical worldview, or do you have your life established and you are trying to fit God into those pieces, but you want to keep it pretty much intact of how you want it to be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot to think about. Thank you. talking about children and youth, you know, you mentioned earlier in our conversation that you have six kids, I think, three mm-hmm. from Ethiopia, three Navajo. So how do you, you know, how do you deal with that? You know, because they have different backgrounds, right? And then they are part of your family now, of course. And so how do you deal with that in you know, providing them their, so that they can evolve and develop and find their path?
Yeah. First of all, honoring all of their stories, celebrating the beauty in their land and their culture is so important. Honoring their biological parents is very important to me. And just having those days of recognizing significant events is important. And then, you know, my children now are most of them are young adults and out of the house, actually. So it's good for me to see how they have taken in diverse perspectives.
Talking a little bit about the challenges that we have going on in the world today, what are some of the worries that you have, you know, what you see? And then linked with that, you know, where are you still hopeful and or where are you hopeful? So what are your worries and where is your hope?
Well, I certainly have worry about the numbers that we're starting to see in how many decades we're losing in our fight against poverty and hunger in the world and the food insecurity that's coming. So I have great concerns about what COVID and what the pandemic has done for in that work. And we're just starting to construct what that might look like as the next normal and the next great work that we're called to do. And in that is wrapped up a concern that we are trying to both, people are trying to, you know, hunker down and take care of themselves, and yet we need them to keep that global perspective so that they also understand that they're called to sacrifice and to help others and to work for those that are most vulnerable in their own communities, but around the world. And I worry about the fatigue and compassion fatigue that people will have. And even the news of the vaccine is amazing and wonderful. But I certainly hope that North Americans don't treat the news of vaccine as, okay, good, solve that one, we're done. We've got the answer. It's easy. I just go get a shot in my arm, make sure my family's got a shot in the arm. And then, well, what do you mean? You know, isn't that the answer for everybody? There's going to be issues of access to the vaccine. There's going to be issues of the poverty that is going to remain, the setbacks that are going to have already happened. So that's something that concerns me. And then, of course, also looking at what is being called the shadow pandemic, the harm that has come in gender-based violence, the losses that women and girls have experienced, particularly as frontline workers and loss of the employment in domestic violence and in sexual abuse and the loss of education, so many things that we're going to have to, as international organizations, work to try to restore those things. And those things, once lost, are hard to get back together, especially when there's so many other challenges that also are going to compete as priorities. So those are hard mm-hmm. things. And cause me some concern and worry. Yet I still have hope. The hope has to come not from within me and even from within other people, but the hope has to come deeper from that than that, from God. And I still believe that people can sacrifice and can learn that once I'm okay, it's not really okay until everyone's okay here. And so I really believe that we can have people see that. I think in that way, my hope could be most in the younger people who aren't satisfied to have information saying that something is happening that is unjust and that people are being ignored or oppressed, and who are at the edge of finding their voices and who are willing to start to speak in and against those justice in those justice conversations. So I have a lot of hope that the young people will lead as we go forward.
Thanks for then sharing, you know, that you still see hope. I do agree, and especially the younger generation. I mean, you know, you think about climate change, which should be, you know, front and center of everything we do. Mm-hmm. That a person that really moved this world forward is somebody of the youth, right?
Yes.
And we have a lot to learn from the younger generation. I'm amazed. Is there one last message that you would have for the listeners, you know, of this podcast?
Yeah, well, you know, I think we have to continue, even in the hard times, to live a life of gratitude. We're recording this just before the American Thanksgiving. And I think that that's a mixed emotional day for me, knowing more mm-hmm. of the history of how that came about, knowing that some people were actually celebrating, you know, massacres and traumas that happened to Indigenous people. And yet, you can work through those things and you can come together. And now it's a day that is observed by many people. And I think we can have those hearts of gratitude and hope while still hanging on to those things of great lament and longing. And in fact, I think it's our lament and our longings that propel our passions for a greater hope and a new tomorrow. And so I think those things are given to us by God so that we live purposeful lives.
Great. What a wonderful way to close our conversation today. Thanks for making time. Thanks for, you know, being who you are, for what you do. And it was a great honor and pleasure.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Thank you for listening to Walk, Talk, Listen. Please check us out on www.100mile.org or follow us on Facebook.